If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
With the last international break of 2025 out of the way, we can now look forward to four uninterrupted months of Manchester City bliss. But it was quite an interesting international break from a City perspective, with Erling Haaland's Norway qualifying for the first major tournament of his career, Nico O'Reilly impressive for England, Arsenal fans losing their minds about Phil Foden, and more. City are mercifully back in action on Saturday when they travel to face Newcastle ahead of a midweek Champions League encounter with Bayer Leverkusen. We'll be getting the perspectives from Tyneside and Nordrhein-Westfalia ahead of those games later in the show. So, can City pick up where they left off against Liverpool before the break and embark on a big winter run? And are we ever going to get an outcome to the bloody charges? Let's find out in today's Blue Moon Podcast. I'm Dan Burke, standing in for David Mooney this week, and I'm joined by City fan Chris Higginbottom.
Hello there.
And the Athletic City correspondent Sam Lee.
Hello.
All right. Sam, welcome back. It's been a while since you've been on the podcast, right?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I think mine and Mooney's podcast is probably repetitive enough without spreading that to a second platform. But seeing as he's away, because he can't be bothered anymore, I thought, yeah, it's just nice, isn't it? It's going to be a nice chat. I don't have to waffle on too much, although I will. And yeah, looking forward to this.
It's like that, you know, when the Flintstones or the Jetsons used to do like crossover episodes? It's a bit like all of them, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Is when they got the Cheers cast back when Frasier started. It's that kind of thing. I don't know which Cheers character would I be? Probably Norm at this point.
Which Cheers character are you, Chris?
I never really watched Cheers, but knowing what I do about it, probably Woody.
I've never seen it, so I couldn't tell.
Never
I don't think I can name it. Woody Harrelson was in it, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
That's who you're going for. Fair enough.
Yeah, solid choice that.
Well, there was something that happened over the international break. I don't know if you saw this. Erling Haaland celebrated Norway's 4-1 win over Estonia by treating his teammates to 60 to 70 cheeseburgers, which is a hell of an order if you're working in that particular burger joint. I was curious to know what your go-to fast food, cheap food, treat food, junk food, whatever you want to call it is, and perhaps what you would treat your colleagues to after a successful day at the office.
I'm not mad on fast food. Like I don't eat McDonald's. I think that's, you know, like cigarettes and Alka-Pops. That's for children, really. I do like fried chicken though. There's something quite base and primal that appeals to me about tearing flesh from bone with my teeth, and it tastes good.
KFC.
Yeah, I mean the trouble is with KFC, the franchise. It depends on the people there. How sometimes it's good and sometimes it's awful. So it's better to find like a sort of bespoke, dirty little local one just run by people whose lives depend on it.
Who run it like it's the Navy.
Yes, basically, yeah.
For you, Sam?
Well, first of all, when I saw that Haaland headline, they didn't necessarily make clear it was for other people. And him eating 60 to 70 burgers after a game is not beyond the realms of possibility, is it? It's possible. I think I could go like hyper specific with this. I think it would be a chicken burger shop in Chorlton called Zach's Fried. It's opposite the Morrisons.
Oh.
And if ever we're just feeling like, well, my wife mentioned it last Wednesday and then she mentioned it again on Thursday and then I got to dinner on Friday and I was like, we're obviously going to get Zach's Fried, aren't we? Like, that's just how it is. but they were doing buy one, get one free on Deliveroo. And it was like, yeah, you just can't order. It's too busy. Like, we're at capacity. So it's
Erling
really
Haaland's ordered 60 to 70 burgers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Haaland's back in Manchester. Yeah. That's the city Christmas party this year.
He was in Chinatown the other week as well, wasn't he?
Actually? Yeah. And like, was he around like Fat Pat and all that kind of stuff? So. Yeah. But that's the thing with Haaland. He's obviously not normal, is he, in like most senses? But at the same time, he is just like a very normal young man, as normal as it's possible to be, I guess. But yeah, I think it's probably that. They don't do much. It's just different chicken burgers, fries. They do like fried Oreos and stuff, which I've never really got into. But yeah, if I'm going to treat myself, it's probably going to be that. And also, if you're out in Chorlton having a drink, the pub that's like two doors down will let you take it in and eat it in there, which is like, there's not really much better than that.
Is that the Chorlton Tap? Is it that one?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. So there's your night good out stuff. Next time you're around the area.
Sorted.
Cool. I've not been out in Chorlton for Samly a bit, actually. Approved. I used to live there.
And have you seen these Nike Mind shoes that the players are wearing these days?
These Nike shoes they've got these days. I did see briefly about it. I haven't looked into the science.
Well, the science is reflexology, isn't it?
Okay.
They push on your chakras on your feet or whatever it is, don't they?
Yeah. I actually had a little look at this, and each part of your foot is supposed to correspond in it to a bit of your body, like the heel is the pelvis, tip of your big toe is the brain, small intestine on the arch of your foot. It's a tiny little spot just on the bridge of your foot there for the gallbladder. I mean, it's just bollocks.
You were making that sound really good. Yeah. It was a decent sales pitch.
Well, yeah, and ultimately, like many decent sales pitches, load of old waffle.
Yeah, I saw Jamie O'Hara wasn't impressed on Sky Sports News when he was asked about it, so I think that's all I need.
Oh, maybe it is good, then. I don't know. Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, all these little points on your feet that are supposed to, you know, do something for your brain. Are you trying to program our brain with trainers to buy more trainers? I mean, all of your foot touches the floor every time you walk anyway, so...
I suppose not for everyone, yeah. I guess.
It's true.
Well, yeah, I mean over like my head here. Your foot, but, you know, the bits that correspond with where you walk, it's just you're walking anyway, aren't you? It's
like, how much are these? Do we know how much they are? Oh, retail.
They've got nodules. I don't know, probably... I mean, that's the point, isn't it? It's just they've made a new thing to make more money out of people who have enough disposable to think, oh, that'll be a status.
Yeah.
Shell out on that.
Speaking of which, I think Mooney should buy us all a pair out of the podcast budget, and then we can wear them during the podcast and see if it sort of makes the chat improve.
Yeah, well, the listeners could be the judge of that, can't they?
Exactly, yeah. Anyway, let's crack on. And the first and biggest order of business today is Liverpool's disallowed goal. Should it have stood? No, I'm only joking. I don't want to talk about that anymore. There's been enough debate about that already, hasn't there? And the only answer that matters at this point is who fucking cares, I think. So let's actually talk a little bit more about Erling Haaland, because he got 4 goals in 2 games over the international break as Norway qualified for the World Cup, which is their first major international tournament for 28 years, therefore his life, isn't it, and his career. He's now got 32 goals in 20 games for club and country this season. He's actually pretty good, isn't he, Sam?
Well, one thing I don't want to do on this podcast is just keep referring to things I say every week on the other podcast, because that's just going to be boring. So I'm going to present everything as brand new information, like nobody's ever heard it before, or just make up completely new opinions. Because that wouldn't be the new opinion, would it? So on the subject of Haaland, I'm going to say I've never had a word to say against him. I think he's great, and I think he does a lot for the team, and he's got no weaknesses in his game. In the past, and look, there will come a time in the future when he's not scoring goals, and then you do look at him and you think, what are you doing, mate? Or like, he'll miss a really big chance and they'll be the only one he's got, and you think, you're in the team. The opinion I always say is, look, you're in the team to score goals, mate, so you better bloody do it. And that's exactly what he's doing this season, isn't it? Like, he's just scoring an unbelievable amount of goals, but also the way the team's kind of developing in terms of like the people who have left, but also the style at the moment. I don't know how long he's going to last with them being a bit more direct. I think as long as Pep keeps smoothing the edges down, they'll just go back to what they were doing, probably. But the way they're playing, it's more in his image. And he's by far the biggest character, personality, and like leader and player in the team. And you can't say fairer than that. Like, I've said it in the treble season, the team was set. The team was set and he was there as like the icing on the cake. And I think you can make an argument that they may have won the treble without him, or at least they would have been good enough to do it, I think, like they were the year before, but they just kind of got scuppered by Madrid, didn't they? But they were there in the mix, and they would have been in the mix again. But now it's like, if you take Haaland out of it, that team's certainly not set in the way that it was before. And he's really stepped up.
I mean, there's been a lot of talk about City being over-reliant on him this season, certainly with his goals, and they are, yeah. With that in mind, and with the World Cup coming up at the end of the year, Chris, now at the end of the season, do you think City need to manage his minutes a little bit better, maybe, and you know, avoid him burning out with the World Cup coming up?
Well, I don't think the World Cup's any of our concern, is it?
Do you think he might ask for that, potentially?
I don't think... I mean, Sam might know more of this than I do, but I don't think that's really in his nature, is he? He wants to just play, score, break records, carry on doing so as much as he's physically able. And I don't think, you know, unless he feels a niggle, I don't think he'd necessarily play through that. But I don't think he's going to be asking to manage his time with one eye on the World Cup. He wants to get momentum for the World Cup and just carry on scoring goals, because that's what he lives for, isn't it? Lives and breathes for it. I wouldn't have. It might be a worry with, you know, Marmoush not being there if we're not able to rotate. You know, Pep has a habit, doesn't he? You score two goals, he'll take you off if the game's looking safe. Perhaps we don't have much option for that. So yeah, there might be a bit of a conundrum in the works there, but we'll see. I wouldn't have thought Haaland himself would be.
Yeah, he does tend to look after himself as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He said during the Italy game that he was fired up by Gianluca Mancini grabbing his arse, which is, you know, we all love a bit of gamesmanship, don't we? Well, that's sort of sexual assault, isn't it, Sam?
Yeah, I think there's probably a specific threshold to when it tips over to. Because, I mean, it would be, wouldn't it? Like, you could.
If you did that in the street, it literally would be sexual assault.
Yeah, but also, like, you could probably make a case for that being like some kind of workplace harassment. But I don't know, like, there's a specific line that you would cross before it would actually be a problem. And I'm sure it has happened on the pitch once or twice. But that is just, everything just fires him up, doesn't it? He said it, who was it he said it about after the Brentford game? He just said, oh, he was kicking me or whatever. So I was like, right, well, I'm going to score then. Thanks very much. And he always says, doesn't he? He goes, well, thanks to him. That's why I scored the goal. So cheers, mate. Yeah. Keep doing it. But I saw the clip when somebody pulled his hair and he turned around. He was really pissed off about that, wasn't he? It wasn't even pulling his hair. It was just like, it was kind of like a friendly, passive-aggressive gesture, if there is such a thing. He didn't like that at all.
You ever been inappropriately touched on a football pitch?
No, I don't think so. Not like that, anyway.
No, not like that. No, I don't think I carry the same threat as Haaland. I don't think I need to be put off to such an extent. And there's probably easier ways of doing it. Much easier ways of doing it.
Have you ever inappropriately touched someone, Chris? On a football pitch?
I'll leave it open-ended if you want. I mean, no. I've had my shorts pulled down.
That is quite inappropriate, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
Someone else who had a good international break was Nico O'Reilly, with two very impressive outings for England, making his debut against Serbia and then also played against Albania. Are we at the point with him, Chris, where, you know, left-back is basically his best position? He's sort of considered someone who fills in there for City, but it's well suited to him, isn't it? And Thomas Tuchel seems to agree.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's other players in that sort of realm for England that could compete with him. But if he carries on playing like that, then the position, you know, is his, as far as I'm concerned. If he carries on playing like that for City, then the same applies, really. The good thing about him and Eight Nuri is they can both play in a more advanced position, so there are options there. But is left back his best position? I've not seen him play further up the pitch in the first team for City to know if that would be a better option for him. But if it ain't broke, do you know what I mean? Let's stick with it for the moment.
He made a couple of appearances like off the bench earlier in the season, I seem to remember, and wasn't amazing, but it was quite a small sample size. Do you think he could potentially...
What, sort of 10 position?
Yeah, or in sort of central midfield, yeah. Do you think he could maybe start for England at the World Cup at left-back, Sam?
Oh, does that mean Kieran Trippier doesn't get to do it anymore? That'd be a shame.
Please.
It was just like, so many things about Southgate England were good. And then it's just like, well, you just got a guy there who offers no width, or like, it just, it doesn't work. You can't play a right foot on the left, maybe ever, in that position, but certainly not the way Trippier does it. I know you got upside with corner deliveries and stuff, but direct free kicks, I suppose. But it was always just like, that just doesn't really work. So yeah, like, why not? But the thing is, Tuchel's squad seems to change quite a bit. You know, O'Reilly's just in the picture now. He wasn't in it previously, really. So it's definitely possible, because it looks like, barring injury or anything like that, he's going to carry on playing a significant amount of minutes for City there. And he's obviously now in the England squad in a way that others are. Because Tuchel's whole thing is you need to be playing regularly, otherwise you're not going to get in. And that's for, like, whether that's Lewis Skelly or Alexander-Arnold or, I don't know, Grealish, Foden, Bellingham, whatever. Bellingham's another case, really. He's definitely got a chance. And why not? Like, compared to how kind of one-dimensional it was with Trippier or whichever right-footed left-back we had before, somebody who offers you so much for a coach like Tuchel, who's going to have similar ideas to Pep in terms of, well, you can get up the wing, or you can attack inside when the wing is wide, or whatever it may be. You can come into the middle. It does seem like a good match, yeah. I mean, look, if it can work for City, it can certainly work for England.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And I really like Miles Skelly as well, but you know, if you're in the position, then if he stays injury free and playing well, then why would he change it?
Yeah. I think Miles Lewis Skelly's a good player, but a little twat. So maybe that's what England need, but you know.
Well, to be fair, that does seem to be Tuchel's policy, doesn't it, with Bellingham?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and he's good, Lewis Skelly, but he's not, like, Bellingham is amazing, but he is a massive dickhead.
Yeah.
And it's like, if there is that element with Lewis Skelly, and we don't just see it like that because we're looking at it from like a City point of view, and if he actually is like that, then maybe that counts against him as well. But yeah, also he's barely played, has he? So,
yeah. Look it out. There's also a lot of debate about Phil Foden and where he could play for England at the World Cup. Chris, obviously we know where his best position is for City. Where do you think he slots in for England, if at all?
It's hard to say. I think it might be he just mixes and matches depending on the opponents and, you know, the attributes of the people he'll be up against. He does sometimes struggle, you know, against the bigger boys physically. But then again, I don't know. It's the players around him as well as the players he's against. Like, am I just being biased when I'm looking at City players playing for England and thinking, why is he not being passed to?
Hmm.
Like, I know we've talked about Bellingham being a bit of a dickhead, and his ego is kind of there for all to see. It's unavoidable, but he does seem to have a, you know, predilection for not passing to certain players at times, which is a bit strange. Mm. Same with, I thought Rashford was hesitant sometimes to give the ball to Nico O'Reilly, but, you know, it's not all the time, so maybe I am just biased, but I don't know. But in terms of Foden, where does he start? You've got to mix and match it. That's why you've got a squad. I would prefer to see him in that number 10 role. I don't want to see him as a 9 or a false 9. I prefer to see him pulling the strings a bit more, working the passes, working the spaces.
I like how Tuchel said he was honest about it. It was like him, Kane and Bellingham can't play together. Like,
yeah.
Fine. And look, and it's like, if I'd rather it be Foden. To be fair, I saw Craig Hope when he said that Bellingham shouldn't go to the World Cup. He got absolutely murdered by everyone. But again, this is from a City point of view, but I agree with him. Like, one of the best things, you know, I said there's loads of good stuff about Southgate England, and like, obviously one of them, and the thing that everybody recognises and acknowledges, is that it is that kind of no dickheads policy. And everyone says, oh, well, 20 years ago, the golden generation, there was massive egos, they didn't like each other. And the best thing about this team is it's a nice fresh camp, it's a good atmosphere. It's like, well, why would you want a guy who's like kind of toxic towards his own teammates sometimes? Like, no, and also, like, yeah, he is amazing, but it's not like Kane. We do have very good alternatives in that position. I know you can't say Morgan Rodgers is better or as good as Bellingham, but he's been doing well. And then you've got Foden, and you've got Palmer as well, who's obviously brilliant. So it's like, you could just leave him out. I wouldn't mind it. But I like how Tuchel's upfront about it, because he's not just going to cram players in for the sake of it. And to be fair, the last Euros, like, Foden and Bellingham, I didn't think either. I thought those two and Saka had similar tournaments, but Saka and Bellingham and also Palmer, they scored key goals, and you can't really overlook that. And obviously, unfortunately for Foden, some of those goals came like 30 seconds after he went off the pitch. So it was a bad look, but none of them played that well overall, and they were all kind of crammed together. So I'm glad that Tuchel's got a clear idea about how it will and won't work, at least. And if whoever gets left out.
You say that, Sammy. You say that you can't play those.
He did it, didn't he?
Three. Well, he did it straight away. Which is really weird. But yeah, maybe he's just, you know, having us over there.
Yeah, or just, I don't know, experimenting. Maybe he's like, well, let's just see. Let's like scratch that itch. And then if it looks good, then maybe go with it again in March. Or if it confirms his suspicions, then go, okay, let's park that. And in March, it's like, right, this is what I'm going to try and do in the summer. So let's plow ahead with that. We'll see, I guess. But Foden's reputation with England fans is really bad, isn't it? Probably because of what I just said. You know, he didn't get a crucial goal, and he went off just as others scored, and it was like, well,
it's so frustrating to watch. Though you watch him play, and he is consistently like always when he's not off the ball, and we've got the ball, and he's looking, he's always making really intelligent runs. He's always putting himself in a really good position to receive the ball, and it's like, I mean, the argument's been made by other people probably better than me, but you know, I don't think there's a trust from a lot of players in the way they play their club football to give Foden the ball in the types of space where he is confident receiving it. So they'll look at it and make a split decision, and Foden's thinking, this is me in a good position to receive the ball. Give me the ball and I will show you. And they don't, or they hesitate, and then they wait a little too long and they give it him when he's not quite in the right position, and he ends up, you know, not getting it at the right time, loses it. It's not quite gelling, and I don't know whether more time is needed with him in the team to make that happen, or whether they look at that as a collective and say, you see how he's asking for the ball here, that's where you give it him. Because at the moment, it's just not quite ticking over with the rhythm that he requires, as far as I can see.
This is a paid promotion for NordVPN. I'm in a bit of a unique position because normally we'd tell you about the benefits of using NordVPN while travelling to City's Champions League away games, for example. That's still true. You can protect yourself while using public Wi-Fi in the airport or hotel if you go into Real Madrid or Bodo Glimt later this season. And you can do things like use NordVPN to watch your subscriptions from back home. But I'm based in Germany these days, so when City have had a resounding win, like they did against Liverpool, and I want to re-watch it on Match of the Day, I use NordVPN to do just that. It's easy to do. I just open up the app on my laptop, pick the UK from the list of countries and hit connect. There are more than 8,400 servers across 129 countries to choose from, and you can change your virtual location instantly. If you want it to happen automatically, you can also turn on auto connect to do it without even thinking about it. One NordVPN account can be used on up to 10 devices, and it supports every major platform, including Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, and even Android TV. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/bluemoon. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan, and there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. We'll also put the link in the podcast episode description.
Get a dollop of City nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/bluemoonpodcast.
Something you'll have missed by not being on Twitter over the international break, Sam, is Arsenal fans absolutely losing their minds about Foden, it seems. Never has the phrase living rent-free been more appropriate, I don't think. Why is that, do you think? Why do they hate him so much?
What would the seeds of it be? Was it because it was always pitted as Foden against Saka as the rivalry, and then obviously when City won the league, the 4 in a row, he was like the talisman for City, wasn't he? And he just kind of destroyed that argument. So is it just the kind of bitterness?
Well, this latest one, it seems to have originated from what at the time when he set up Eze, it did feel like a bit of an overly glowing assessment of Foden's pass to Eze, the put it on a plate thing, because obviously he passed it through, and it was a very, if you go into it, it's a very intelligent pass, because your natural pass there might be to put it in front of him to run onto and strike on his left foot, but he sort of weighted it in such a way that it was natural for him to stride onto it with his right foot, which is more natural for him, and he's put an absolutely amazing finish into the top corner. But they seem to eulogise the pass a little bit too much, and I don't know, even in the post-match interview with Eze, they kind of maintained that focus and put it to him and Eze seemed a little bit uncomfortable with it, and it was like, how come you, I don't know. Is there like a media thing where they've said, oh, Foden's been a bit out of sorts, let's make sure we heap praise on him, and it's backfired? Or is there a more sinister, cynical kind of engagement farming ploy at work where they've said, let's say some, I mean, I'm maybe going a little bit tinfoil hat here, but, you know, to overdo it like that, because the official England Twitter account said, put it on a plate, and it's just, you've got a load of Arsenal fans here who are waiting for something to be enraged about. It's like, give them something to think about. Don't feed them something to be enraged about. Well, exactly. Yeah. I just, what do you think the motives are of that kind of overzealous praise that Foden is getting there? Is it because they're trying to make up for some undeserved criticism and it's backfired?
I mean, maybe it does build. The thing is, I don't know. I would say I'd be surprised if there was like a 3-line whip from the FA saying, look, can we kind of build this boy up while we can, because he's not had the best times at City last season, and we know there was a bit of like fragility around that. But maybe because like I was saying, England fans generally don't have a high opinion of him. He didn't get a big moment in the last Euros like a lot of the rivals for the position did. I don't know, maybe with the FA you can think they're just like praising their player, putting the tweet out. But then it is like, well, the guy he passed to did do an amazing finish into the top corner as well. So I don't know. I hadn't thought about it. It is unusual, but I would say I'd be surprised if they tried to get ITV on side with, like, can you big this boy up? But it wouldn't be the strangest thing that's happened in kind of, you know, PR meets football.
Is there a pro Phil Foden media agenda?
But again,
or are they bigging him up on purpose because they know that it's going to bait a load of frothing Arsenal mob to create engagement and therefore, you know, clicks for the
is
win?
Is that why Haaland's never offside? See, I've seen enough of Twitter to see that argument. Haaland's never offside because of the refereeing establishment. Yeah.
Couple of other bits for the international break then. Ruben Dias and Bernardo Silva were in a row with the Portugal fans after their defeat to Ireland. That's not very linked in, is it, Sam?
No, it's not actually. It's not very high performance. Oh, maybe it is high performance mindset. I suppose it depends how you spin it. What were they? Do we know what they were rowing about? This is probably a conversation that I should know already. But
I assume they were just getting shit for the defeat.
Yeah.
From the fans.
It seemed like it got personal. Because there's a point where you saw something was heard that was shouted, and that just like the mist descended, and it was like, hold me back, sort of thing.
You're better when you haven't got a girlfriend. To be fair, Dias has actually been good though, hasn't he, recently? So, yeah, I don't know. They would have lost their heads, wouldn't they? Losing 2-0 at Ireland with Ronaldo being sent off, they would have lost their heads. So yeah, and then if something like that was said as well, then it's perfect storm, isn't it? Good luck to him.
Also, Kusunov got sent off for Uzbekistan with a very Kusunov tackle. Do you think any concern for him, Chris, about, you know, being left out of the squad completely against Liverpool after that injury? He's kind of lost his place that he was building up at right back to Nunes.
I think you should always be concerned if you're not playing. I don't think he personally should be overly concerned because, you know, he's still quite fresh at City and he's young and he's still learning his trade. But yeah, be concerned. You know, he needs to get his head down and fight, not assume that he will be picked and, you know, work his bollocks off to make sure that he is. I think he's one of those players at the moment where at this stage of his career, we will only be using him sparingly, where we really, really require his attributes, and there's more kind of trusted custodians in there where he might be more reliable. He might not get the nod, but yeah, concerned, but not overly concerned.
There's always chances to get back in, isn't there? And like, he was doing well. I know it because he's so young and new to the team. The way the team's moved on as well, he might be like, he's got a bit of catching up to do, but yeah. I think we always see this, like, oh, how's so-and-so going to get back in? And
just waiting for John Stones to get injured, probably.
Yeah. But has it ever really happened where, like, the team has moved on? That'd be an interesting question, actually. I can't think of any, like, glaring examples off the top of my head. Like, in the treble season, yeah, Foden didn't really get a look in. But again, like, the team just worked. He did his bit in the, inverted commas, less important games. The rest of them did it. But, you know, everything kind of catches up eventually. And Nunes has been really good, but... And maybe he's just a go-to option for the rest of the season. But it wouldn't surprise me if Kusunov had plenty of games to play at right back. And then...
Did you see the foul, by the way?
No, I didn't, actually. Was it just a classic?
It was a hospital pass, wasn't it?
It was a hospital pass.
Not for himself.
And then he put a guy in
hospital. Well, no, for the other guy. But I watched it, and even in slow-mo, like, he nearly moves too fast for the human eye in the slow motion replay. He's just like, boom, just across, and the guy like tumbles up in the air. And
that's great. That I'm going to see that. I do love it when he does that. Apart from, you know, when it's got real life consequences like Brighton scoring a goal afterwards, but it is fun, isn't it? And he was doing really well, wasn't he? So it'd be good to see him back soon. There's enough games, but Leverkusen, that could be a 20-minute job against them, and then you build it up from there. Christmas as well. Like, so many games at Christmas.
Well, speaking of which, Omar Marmoush scored for Egypt against Cape Verde. He's going to be off to the African Cup of Nations at the end of December, potentially missing up to 11 games for City. Same with Ike Nori going away with Algeria. Is that a concern, Sam, those two players jetting off? You would have known it was coming, surely, but...
Yeah. I suppose it depends, because it depends on the injury situation with everyone else. Because recently, like, we know they've not been playing since, what, September? because they've had injuries and City have kind of gone from strength to strength. So it's a shame not to have the option. And I still really believe Aitnuri can do a lot in different ways that O'Riley can, and those two can kind of interchange quite well. And Marmoush, his goal was off the right, wasn't it? And it's like, well, if all of a sudden the right wing is coming inside and City have got space to run and he can do that, then great. But the fact of the matter is, over the last couple of months, he's not really been around and it hasn't hampered City too much. And, you know, City have now got to the stage again where, like, possibly one player like Kucinov there is just being left out of the squad altogether. So if those two are out and the squad's full enough otherwise, I don't think it's necessarily going to be a problem. And yeah, like you say, they would have known that would have been the case heading into the season anyway. So it is what it is.
I'm absolutely not concerned at all right until they leave and Haaland and O'Riley get immediately injured.
Yeah, that would be typical City, wouldn't it? Some interesting comments from Ederson over the international break. Speaking to ESPN Brazil, he admitted that he tried to leave City during the 2023-24 season and it affected his performances last season, which I think we all saw that. I'm not going to ask if you feel vindicated, Sam, because I know you did talk about this on Let Me Talk already.
Yeah, we did.
For your reporting about Ederson, but I do want to bring in this question from a listener, from John on the emails. He said there have been a few consistent standout performers this season for City: Haaland, Doku, O'Riley, Nico, Donnarumma, but who has had the biggest influence on this version of the team so far? I'd actually say Donnarumma, as he gives the whole team confidence and he strikes me as a proper leader controlling things from the back. Interesting one with Donnarumma, because I think when he signed, we all thought there would be a pretty harsh adaptation period to sort of City getting used to this goalkeeper that wasn't, you know, nearly as good with the ball at his feet as the last guy was. But have you been surprised, Sam, by how smooth that's been?
Yeah, because all the questions were like, well, how are they going to play then? Like, what do you mean City aren't going to have a good passer from the back? Like, what do you mean? Why would they do that? But as we've seen, they just kind of become less reliant on possession, less worried about having possession and dropping the opposition, as we now call it. And just more like, well, okay, well, he might not find a great pass all the time, but he's going to make saves. And it is seemingly as simple as that. So I have been surprised. I found the process of working out what they're trying to do, and, you know, we're still trying to work it out, but I found that process really fun. And in terms of the point made about him being like the most influential, he definitely has been great, and everything said there to back up the point is true. Like, he obviously is a big character. He's like, Trafford's a really good goalkeeper and he's obviously a big personality, but like, Donnarumma is Donnarumma, isn't it? Like, he's kind of a big star in his own right. And that has made a massive influence. The only thing I'll disagree with is, as much as all that's true, I think Haaland has still had the bigger impact. And maybe it's just more obvious because the goals are going in. But he's scored more goals than Donnarumma's made saves. Donnarumma has been very good, but Haaland has just been so unreal and so important. And City looked really good when they got space to counterattack, or like even the first 50 minutes against Dortmund when they didn't have the ball, but it was like, what if they get it and they can run? With these guys, they're going to be a threat. But if you take Haaland out of it, even if they've got Doku and they got Foden and let's say Marmoush off the right or whoever it may be, without Haaland, that threat isn't anywhere near the same. And obviously the goal scoring, maybe I'm wrong, and they would just, if Haaland wasn't there, maybe they'd just find the goals like they did in the last like 2 months of last season. But if he wasn't there, they'd have big problems. So yeah, Donnarumma has been fantastic and take nothing away from him, but Haaland has still been the most influential for sure, surely.
Haaland, Wayne Rooney's top three players of the season so far, by the way.
Who did he pick?
He said Gyökeres, Mbeumo and Semenyo.
Fucking hell. Paddy Kenny.
Gyökeres, Mbeumo and
Semenyo.
Semenyo's fine, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, but on the other side, a bit weird.
Gyökeres.
In terms of
I thought Gyökeres wasn't getting great press.
The Arsenal fans that I know don't rate him at all.
That's saying something. Oh, do you know normal Arsenal fans though?
Well, they self-describe as normal Arsenal fans, but that's a matter of debate, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, it's all a spectrum.
They're normal people, therefore not normal Arsenal fans.
I guess so, yeah.
Was that Rooney on the overlap, was it? He must just be going full bait at that point. Because how could you not put Haaland in it? And I've got the point before, like as an all-round player, he's maybe not there, but kind of that side's improving. And he's just been so important and so good.
He's still banging on about that bloody QPR game, isn't he? Yeah, right, give it a rest, mate.
It's easy, isn't it?
Absolutely insane. But yeah, in terms of John's question, I think I would agree with Sam in that Haaland is the totem and is the most influential. But I think Donnarumma definitely the most kind of surprisingly impactful because he's been an immense presence.
Yeah. And was it his agent who said City wanted a boost in that goalkeeper position? They wanted to like boost the rest of the team. And like, if that was the thought process behind it or part of it, it's worked 100%, hasn't it? Because again, I agree with all the points made. Like, he does give confidence to the rest of the team. He does give a boost to the defence. And I think Guardiola's on record saying the same. It makes it easier to play with him behind them. And yeah, it's been really good. And, you know, a lot of characters are left. So to get a big character in is a bonus.
And speaking of Antoine Semenyo, there has been a little rumour knocking around. I don't know how true it is, possibly not very true at all, but he is a player that I like a lot and would like to see playing for City one day. Maybe he's got a £65 million release clause. Apparently, would you be tempted at that price, Sam?
Yeah, and again, like if you asked me like 3 or 4 months ago, even like with how he is playing now in mind, I would have said no. That's just not the kind of. It doesn't seem to be the kind of thing that City go for. But the way, like I say, the way that they're playing now, a bit more direct, a bit more space to go into, the way they're kind of evolving with the Premier League, he maybe is that type of player. I watched that game when Bournemouth played Fulham on the Friday night and he scored the two really good goals. And I was like, okay, well, this, from a media point of view, I was like, this hype is about to go like stratospheric now. Like, it doesn't surprise me now that Rooney's putting him in his best three players. And also, it doesn't surprise me that I went, yeah, fair enough. Because like that's where he's at. He is one of the most hyped players in the league now. But that night I was thinking, oh, he'll go to Liverpool then. And I was like, and if it goes really stratospheric, he might go to Real Madrid. And I didn't think about City at all. But even since then, the way that City are playing, I think he'd fit in quite well. And like the goal threat he's got compared to like City's other wingers, it's massive difference. So unless it's like, oh, he's massively overperforming his XG or something like that, maybe he is. But if this is just a part of his game and he scores goals like that and he plays the way he does, yeah.
It's his XT I like. Obviously, his touch is unreal.
He's very two-footed as well, isn't he? So could play on either flank.
Yeah, and just very direct.
Well, ball's dropping and he doesn't trap it against the ground. It will just like cushion it.
Oh, that's very you, that, isn't it? I've seen you do that a few times.
Stop. Maybe only a few.
But yeah, I'd get him in. And that price is good. And it seems like Bournemouth might let him go in January, or maybe they'll just take the hit. But the reporting is that his release clause is going to be even lower next summer. So maybe it's the case that they'll do that. The thing, normally it's around now when all the managers start to get asked, and particularly at City, oh, you know, do you think he'll do something in December? And obviously last year it was like, they just absolutely had to, didn't they? But now it's like, you don't really need to. But opportunity knocks. If he's 60, 65 million quid, then why not? Unless City just go, well, actually, we'll lock you in for the summer and we'll get you for 50. That would actually be a very City thing to do. Mm. But yeah, I'd be all for that.
Lovely stuff.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Well, City are back in action when they travel to St James's Park to face Newcastle at Saturday tea time. Ahead of the game, David Mooney has spoken to Sam Dalling from the True Faith podcast, starting with what he makes of their start to the season.
It's a good question. It depends which competition you're talking about. I mean, riding high in the Champions League, seems to love those European nights. In the Premier League, it is we'd hoped it would have turned around by now, right? Everyone knows the Alexander Isak situation, not having a striker. So there was a little bit of a, do you want to call it an excuse? Yeah, we'll call it an excuse, right? For not scoring, particularly away from home early in the season. You were going, oh, actually, we went to Aston Villa, played really well, just didn't score, right? So the narrative was, yeah, but if we'd had a centre forward, we'd have won that game. And yet, we're still not winning games. The away form's dire. I'm glad we're at home. We're a bit better at St. James's Park. We're still learning, right? It's only our second season in the Champions League this time around. Last time around, a couple of years ago, we didn't have any sort of a squad. There was a week where we beat Manchester United and Arsenal at the weekends. We beat them, I think, 1-0. In between, we went to PSG and got a draw. We were one up until Tino Livramento had a penalty given against him. It wouldn't have been a penalty in the Premier League. Harsh handball. Anyway, so we had that really wonderful week. But the same 11 played basically all 90 minutes. They were knackered. We then went to Everton on the Thursday night, lost 3-0 or 4-0, went to Spurs and got battered on the Sunday. This year, it's the first time Howell's actually got a little bit of a squad to play with, but he's still not sure what to do. Like, he doesn't like to rotate. He's very loyal to his players. He has got different players, like a variety of options in different positions. And the other week, we went to Bournemouth and suddenly he made six changes. And we're like, oh, that's very un-Eddie Howe-like. So we don't know what to expect. And because of that, the results are inconsistent. And we've had games against Liverpool and Arsenal at home, which we've lost in the dying embers. So, you know, as football fans do, you go, oh, yeah, but if we hadn't conceded that goal and that goal, life would have looked very different, but we did. So it's very difficult to predict Newcastle United, which is odd because Eddie Howe likes control. He likes predictability.
Yeah. Let's touch on the Isak stuff, because that did dominate the summer in the end. And Nick Voltermeyer came in. He's looked pretty good from the outside. He's looked pretty good to start with.
I love him. He's a cult hero, right? And at the moment, he's dropped off a little bit, and that is because he's having to play every game. There's no other option. Johan Risser, who I still believe is not real, right? He's a figment of our imagination. will we ever actually see this man? I don't know. Eddie Howe likes to ease players, and he even did it with Bruno Guimarães when he first came over from Brazil. It took someone else's injury or suspension for him to get a start. Manic Chao, who's probably been our best defender this year, only playing because Fabian Scher got a concussion and so was ruled out for whatever it is, 7-10 days. So Voltermeyer, he's odd, right? Because you look at him, and when the ball goes towards him, what you want to do, your natural instinct at 6'7", is to look at his head or his shoulders. He actually doesn't like challenging for balls in the air, but he is wonderful with his feet. He's very different to Isak. He's younger. He's almost in a similar stage to his career that Isak was when we first bought him. The wingers like playing with him. He's a clever footballer. He sees things. He plays balls in the blind without looking. He's probably had a look before. And so the wingers are enjoying learning how to play in and around him. And he scored a few goals, but he has been flagging a bit, because even Willa Sula, who had started to gain a little bit of Eddie Howe's trust, hasn't been around for the last couple of games. So he's having to play 90 minutes. So Voltermeyer is a lot of expectation on him. And in some ways, it was good he got thrown in, right? Because otherwise, he might still be just getting 20 or 30 minutes. And because he scored those early goals, you know, it can go two ways, can't it, with new signings. They get a couple of goals early, then actually the pressure is off them. It could have gone the other way. So it's worked out well, but we can't be reliant solely on him.
Yeah, he looks like the sort as well that isn't really fazed by the rough and tumble of the Premier League. I caught the Arsenal game basically because I was supporting Newcastle throughout, and like he seemed to be happy to go to war for you.
Yeah, he is. I think he's very calm. I can't imagine him. He's very chilled out. You know, he's always walking around. Sort of the pictures on social media. He likes his basketball. He likes his baggy clothes, like sleeveless vest. Very chilled. No, I don't think anything really phases him. And while it's a different level, a friend of mine is very good friends with Christian Burgess, who's the captain of Union St. Gillois. So I went over for the Newcastle game, and actually the day after we went for coffee with Christian Burgess, who just played up against Voltermeyer. And I was trying not to be the person who's like, oh my God, what's it like to play in the Champions League against my team? And I was very successful, but my wife, without any prompting, started asking those questions for me. And Christian Burgess said, like, I have never been so bruised, without being looking like he's being physical in the way that some strikers grab you and properly give you. It was like, it was just like running into something solid, elbows bruised like everywhere. So I don't think the rough and tumble, as you said, phases him. He can hold his own. I mean, he's a big man, right? He's a big man. And it always fascinates me how footballers are much stronger than they look. Some of them look really weedy. Anthony Gordon looks like there's nothing to him, but he's immensely strong. So yeah, that's a good sign, right? That's a good sign from Voltermeyer.
Yeah. Now, we're recording this quite early, and we know that Gordon and Pope pulled out the England squad. I mean, Pope especially feels like a big loss. But what have you made of Aaron Ramsdale in reserve if he has to play this one?
Well, not much, because he's barely played, right? We did one that, I mean, as you will well know, there's a goalkeeper on your books in Newcastle United, assumed the whole summer they'd be pursuing him, wooing him for like 2 years. And in fairness to Newcastle, they got a lot of criticism for their transfer strategy and the way they went about it this year. There was not much they could do, right? Because there was a clause in his contract saying that as soon as an offer has been accepted for James Trafford, Manchester City have a right to match it, don't they? It lasts 24 hours, and on 23 hours and 59 minutes and 58 seconds, they stuck that eBay bid in and picked him up, yeah. Right? So it would have been interesting to see if we'd have got him, whether Pope was really being challenged as number one. I'm not sure Ramsdale was ever coming in to be number one straight away. Like, Pope's big flaw is his distribution, despite that long throw you might have seen in the Champions League the other week, right? Mm. He is one of those, and the ground feels it as well. And his defenders will feel it. When the ball goes near him with his feet, the whole place just holds its breath. But he's a wonderful shot stopper, and he has won us countless points over the couple of years he's been there. So he's probably our best goalkeeper. But Ramsdale, there's a bit of an arrogance. There's a swagger to him. You know what you need from the goalkeeper? It's like, yeah, I'm the man. Despite the fact he just consistently gets relegated. I love his confidence. So it'll be interesting to see how that... He is not putting as much pressure on Nick Pope as I'd imagine James Trafford would. But again, so it was concussion for Nick Pope. I'm not sure exactly the protocols and when it runs out. He was back in the England squad, which was probably deserved. I was at the England game against Serbia, and Pickford went down for one of those tactical goalkeeper injuries. Pope is the master of that. So maybe that's why Tuchel picked him. Maybe he wanted him to show Jordan Pickford how to do that properly. But yeah, so if he's fit, he will come back in. Gordon's not been brilliant in the Premier League. He's been carrying this hip injury. But again, going back to what I was saying about Howe at the start, right? Gordon went off against West Ham half time, hip injury. Then he plays a couple of days later in the Champions League at home to Atletico Madrid and only lasts 30 minutes. You're like, he didn't need to play in that game. There's Harvey Barnes, there's Elanga who's done NAFL, and Jacob Murphy. So we have options, and Howe's still learning how to use them.
Yeah, it's interesting because I keep forgetting that you do have these sorts of players that could come in and rotate, because Eddie Howe, it feels like he has his 11 that he likes.
Yeah.
In terms of this season then, currently like a bit lower in the Premier League than would have been anticipated, I guess, at this stage. What do you think the aims are for the season, given the start to the season so far?
Well, it's interesting, will it have changed? I think Europe again, I think there is an acceptance. Newcastle's hierarchy is sensible enough to know that we don't want to talk about money and PSR and the ins and outs of that. But I think there's an acceptance, a bit like at Aston Villa last year or whenever it was, that if you're in the Champions League, you're probably going to drop off a little bit. You potentially are if you're a club like with our sort of resources. So if we could finish in the Europa League positions, I mean, if we're going to want to win the Champions League and qualify again, that's absolutely fine by me. But I think Europa League, another cup run. I did hear that it was interesting. Someone was talking about the Conference League and actually how there are clubs who will actively avoid trying to qualify for it almost if there's a position, because actually you make no money out of it. And it's such a drain on resources. And actually because of the whole, so if you're in the Conference League, you can only spend 70% on your wages turnover thing. And whereas if you miss out on the Conference League, suddenly it's 85%. So you can actually be better the following year, which it sounds counterintuitive, right? So what I'm saying is avoid the Conference League. Thursday nights in the Europa League would be fine. I would love the Champions League. But you never know. This time last year, roughly, we're talking about a 0-0 draw at Crystal Palace when Newcastle were dire and everyone's starting to go, oh, it's Eddie Howe, run its course. And there's similar, like, they're very like small murmurings. They're not real. They're social media, but that's where we're at the moment.
Yeah. How do you think this game will go? Because City are, I mean, a bit weird this season. They've been generally quite good in the last few weeks with a few bad spells. But it is at St James's, and, you know, you've got the St James's factor there. And if you look at the last few years, these have always been really good games between these teams.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Like I said, and I know this is a cop-out answer, Newcastle are so unpredictable. They'll have had a couple of weeks off, but then you have 2 weeks off. And what Howe is really good at is he's almost a one game a week manager, in the sense that tactically he can prepare for an opposition, right? The schooling he gave Arteta in the Carabao Cup two-legged semi-final last year was fantastic, but he hasn't got his players around to prepare for that, because Guimaraes is off, Tonali is off, all the international players aren't there. So I don't know how much time he will have to specifically prepare for City. Intensity's always been our identity. Sorry to use that phrase. We're lacking that. but it is, you worry with Newcastle, the plan B, right? They'll come out and they will try and hit teams early, 10, 15 minutes. And if they get that goal in the 10, 15 minutes, fantastic. You worry with Newcastle when they go one down. They just have no answer. Even sometimes when they go one up, to be honest, they don't know whether to then try and kill the game or to sit back, and it's become a bit of a familiar tale. So I don't want to say like, oh, woe is us, because we're in a very nice position, particularly compared to where we have been in years gone by. But I just don't know what kind of Newcastle will turn up. I hope a blooming good one, and I hope we can blow Manchester City away, which we nearly did. Was it last year, the year before, when Edison got injured and then De Bruyne came back, didn't he, and scored that wonderful goal off the bench? And that was the night, even like 2-1 at Isak and Gordon had scored. Yeah, that was a night game. This is, it's 12:30 kickoff, right, isn't it? Everyone's favourite.
5:30, I've got this one.
It's 5:30, is it? Yeah. Yeah, you meant, no, you're probably right. I know that I'm missing it, because in order to go, to get the pass to go to Marseille the following week, I've had to take my wife to Nice that weekend. So the Manchester City game is a sacrificial lamb for me to be able to go and be at Marseille, where the information we got through this morning was basically saying, we don't want you there. Do not wear colours. Do not come into the city centre. Come here. You must be here by 4 p.m. We will let you out in 500 people droves. Expect to wait 2 hours after the game. It's like, oh, okay. I feel really welcome in your city.
Yeah, this sounds like more like a visit to prison than a football match. But here we are, Sam. If Newcastle are to win this one, who are the players that are going to do it? Who's been the most reliable and most informed this season?
Well, the most interesting one will be Lewis Hall, to see if he plays a left back. Now Dan Burn is suspended. This is another one. We keep hearing that Lewis Hall isn't fit, right? And Dan Burn is this conundrum, because he's been one of the best defenders in the Premier League, but he's not in Newcastle for the last year or so, right? I think people can admit that. But he's not in Newcastle's first choice centre-half pairing right now. He's been playing at left-back. Lewis Hall came on. It just gives us a new dimension. He looked blooming fit against Atletico Madrid and against Brentford when we lost. So I think keep an eye on Lewis Hall. Like, I really love it. He offers us something completely different. He allows he opens the left wing up as well. The left winger isn't thinking, oh, I haven't really got anyone on the overlap. So him, and it's that midfield battle, right? Tonali, Guimaraes, and it's interesting, Joe Linton has been first choice for a couple of years, this sort of destroyer. He's not a great footballer. Like, technically, he's way below the level of Guimaraes and Tonali, and how is starting to learn, we think, that maybe a Jacob Ramsey in there, a Lewis Miley, in certain games offers a little bit more. But I think for this one, I think it's a Joe Linton game. So that midfield three and Lewis Hall at left back is who I like.
Yeah. Well, we got the charity bet coming up shortly on the show. Now, I'm not on this show, so I don't have the pressure of whether I have to do it or not. But normally I would give my bet over to the guests so that I don't have to worry about coming up with the score prediction. So I'll give Dan the same liberty. What's your score prediction? How do you think it'll go?
How do I think it will go? Should we call it 2-2? Can we shake hands on 2-2 right now? We'll have a good bit of 5:30 tea time fun. Everyone can get out for their dinner reservation. So that's what I'd be happy with. I can't see Newcastle United at the moment getting anything from that game. Haaland, he just scares me, right? Not just physically, just everything about him. He's a goal scorer, pure and simple, and I can't see how we stop him.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Sam Dalling from the True Faith podcast. So City have got a decent record at St James's Park, Chris, but it feels like a proverbial tough place to go. How tough are you expecting this one to be on Saturday?
Ooh, tough. Well done. yeah, it's good things for us. Big Dan Burn's out, isn't he? He's got two yellow cards, I think. So he's. Oh, are you out as well? What, out of the pub?
Out on the last, yeah. On the lamb.
Fair enough, that's good. On the lamb. I don't know what that means. I'm going to just crash on.
I don't know what that means.
But yeah, on the lamb.
On the run from the
on
police,
the from the police, yeah.
I thought you said rum at first. I was on the lamb's gravy rum. On the lamb? I've never heard that. All the times I've been on the run from the police, I've never heard that.
Yeah. Anyway, don't mind.
Yeah.
Anyway, where were we? Tough play.
Oh, yeah, where were we?
Dan Burn.
Yeah. Yes, he's out. And Wissa is also out injured, so that's a big bonus. Valtomade, though, he's looking a bit dangerous, isn't he? They do have threat. Thing about Valtomade, he reminds me of
You know that song, Shut Up Your Face?
Yeah.
Joe Dolce.
Voltamada. Every time I hear it, I get that song playing in my head. No, so I could do with him being out as well because it's annoying.
He's a bit Haalandy, isn't he? He doesn't look good, but he keeps scoring goals.
I was so convinced he was going to flop.
He is good. Yeah, he's really good. Totally different from Isak, but yeah, he seems to be really doing the business there. So they are a threat. It's going to be freezing cold, full of drunken Geordies by tea time. Really good atmosphere under the lights. Very tough place to go for that alone, but they've got a good team. Given the injuries and the kind of run of form that we're showing, I do expect us to win.
After the international break, it's tough as well, though, isn't it? But that's the thing with this. It's like the prediction.
It's for everyone, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But I suppose a break of momentum can be better for some teams than others. Like Newcastle not doing particularly well. They might come back and they get jolted into life by what's going to be a great crowd, like you say, all those factors. City coming back, like, oh, things were going great. Could we piece this together slightly in a very difficult environment? But it's like asking what you think or how you think this game's going to go is not just a prediction for a one-off game. It's like, can you confidently say how good are City at this moment in time? Mm. Like, are they going to do what they did when they went to Villa and look like broadly all right? They looked like broadly competent as a team, but nothing that happened against Villa surprised me in terms of like, well, they were a bit toothless and they couldn't get Haaland on the ball, and that's kind of been coming. Like, could that happen again? Yeah, maybe. But yeah, I do. I am with Chris. I'm pressed for an answer. I'm going to go with, I think City will win. And if they do, then that's another really big sign that, you know, they're going to be more than all right. If they win now, you'd be thinking, well, I think they'll win the league already, to be honest. But if they win now, I'll be like, oh, I was right. They will win the league. So we'll see what happens.
The tortoise is gathering pace.
How will they set up for this one, do you think, Sam? Will it be just like, same as Liverpool, same team, same again, lads? Or will he change it up, do you reckon?
Well,
it's impossible to predict, isn't it?
It's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, in that same way, I was saying that we'll probably find out quite a lot about City and how they're doing. But like this style of play they got at the moment, where they don't necessarily need the ball to do damage, it's quite an interesting kind of comparison to. And I know we mentioned it a lot on the other podcast, but that was it 3-3, the 3-3 game at the start of the treble season, when Guardiola was like, "Yeah, but if Grealish is here, then he'll take, you know, he'll slow things down and he'll get you all up the pitch." That seems to matter less and less, which, again, you would never have thought would have been the case for City. So all those factors that make St. James's difficult, and yeah, like if you're going to get them on the counter-attack, that's not ideal. Because like you said at the time, you're defending with the goalkeeper then. Like you either need the defenders to be really good individually or just hope your goalkeeper makes saves. So again, Donnarumma comes into that. But then it's like, well, if there is going to be space and it's going to be chaotic and it's going to be end-to-end, that would actually play into City's hands at the moment. And again, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe Haaland misses all his chances and Newcastle get loads and they score them and it just ends up being one of them. But if it is an open game, like it has been in the past, it does suit them now more than ever. And I don't know how they're going to set up. I don't know if they're going to want Doku to come inside like he has been. I hope so, because it's been working. But if Pep sits down to them and us later and explains, well, we didn't want him to do that for this game because of X, Y, Z, we'll go, yeah, fair enough. As long as it works, then do what you want kind of thing. So I don't know how they're going to set up. But broadly speaking, if they don't have the ball, well, for long stretches, even if they end up with, you know, like 48% possession, which would be unusual, I think I'd be pretty comfortable with that at the moment.
Yeah.
Wonder if you'll see Bob after his...
Yeah, I was going to ask about Cherky. Do you think he's sort of the biggest question mark over that Liverpool 11, maybe? Because...
He keeps getting hooked, doesn't he?
Wasn't great, was he?
He's too maverick. Well, he's just too maverick at the moment, isn't he? Like, sometimes he hits the sweet spot, but sometimes he just does stuff that drives Guardiola mad. And although, you know...
Wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, exactly. But everything he does is just kind of like, just find a different gear, mate. It doesn't always have to be that. But, you know, I saw Gael Clichy do an interview and he was saying, like, he's basically had to, like, reprogram himself. Because, to be fair, you can make this argument about every professional footballer, but he was like, the way he plays is a consequence of just being so good in all your youth teams and in all the teams you've ever been in that the coach just says, go and do what you want, mate. And obviously now it's like, the manager's not saying that, is he? Like he's giving them the freedom to do it, but they're, you know, you've just got to, never mind if you're Pep and this idea of, oh, he's so strict, etc. Any coach in the world will be saying, could you not try and fucking nutmeg him when they're going to counter attack if you lose it? Like, so there is that element, but yeah, there is a question mark around it. But then the other question mark is who comes in? Like if you're talking about the right wing, yeah, maybe it would be Bob. Maybe you do Savinho with the game stretch, but you know everyone's got their opinion on Savinho and it's not always necessarily good. And then, but maybe that's the time for Marmoush. But yeah, with Cherky, I don't know. They're just rounding off those edges, aren't they? And fair enough, we all knew that would need to happen, and it's happening before our eyes, I guess.
Yeah. Arsenal are at home to Tottenham on Sunday. I probably fancy them to win that one, to be honest. And then they've got Chelsea away the following week with Bayern Munich sandwiched in between those games. How important, Chris, do you think it is to really keep the pressure on Arsenal, especially at this moment in time?
Well, yeah, that's why we've deployed the ref that we have to that game, isn't it? You're right, though. There could be points dropped, and we need to be, you know, our foot firmly on the neck to take advantage of that. I could definitely see them dropping some points over the next two games. So if we don't, then obviously blows it wide open.
Yeah. Well, City are also in Champions League action in midweek when they face Bayer Leverkusen. David Mooney's also been speaking to Germany-based journalist Archie Rintutt about the Bundesliga outfit and what to expect when they visit the Etihad.
If you'd played them last season, they were a lot better. That's the first thing. As you would be if you had Xabi Alonso as your coach, if you had Florian Wirtz being used properly, Jonathan Tarr at the back, marshalling things, Jeremy Frimpong out at right wing back, Piero Hincapié, who has barely played at Arsenal, but let me tell you, for him to be a reserve option is outrageous. And yeah, they had a bit of a bumpy ride in the summer. You might have seen that Erik ten Hag was there before he then wasn't there after having, how do I put this, upset pretty much everybody at the club. Down to the tea lady was the vibe that, and the reports that I was given. So in a way, I think it's actually helped Leverkusen to put one person in between the Alonso reign. If I would say that, yeah, Erik ten Hag's reign, it made him some sort of sacrificial lamb. And
yeah,
then you bring
the David Moyes effect to an Old Trafford, yeah. Although it's not getting any better since then, so.
But you do it in a month. As opposed to string it out till March. So, yeah. And then Kasper Hjulmand has come in, who you might know from coaching Denmark during the Euros, when near-tragic incident with Christian Eriksen. He's exactly what you would expect him to be in terms of what a lovely bloke. And somebody who is determined to keep calm in every situation. And given how many new young players they have, I think that he's proving himself to be a solid choice so far, because things are a lot smoother, the waters are calmer, and this huge group of young players that they've now had to bring in, because I think they anticipated selling some off when Xabi Alonso was leaving, but I think that, yeah, it's been almost a complete switch around. The thing is that it takes time to build a new team, as, yeah, the 7-2 defeat to PSG showed that Leverkusen are not operating anywhere near the level of the top teams right now. I saw it when I was at their 3-0 defeat to Bayern Munich, where they were barely able to lay a glove on them, despite the fact that Bayern Munich were playing without Harry Kane, for example. Michael Olise didn't start that either. And yeah, it was labelled as a buy and B team here. So this Leverkusen side that's rocking up has potential. There are young players in it who can shine. Ernest Pocu, for one, is a very dangerous forward with lots of speed and technical ability. Alejandro Grimaldo's left foot could repair nations, I'm convinced of it. I don't know what he can't do with that left foot. His free kick taking is outstanding. He's already got a couple this season. There's talk of him being the best free kick taker in the world, and I struggle to think of anyone better right now. So they do have weapons, but they also have problems when it comes to playing top teams.
Yeah, don't give away free kicks around the edge of the box is mainly the top tip there, I guess. What's going on with Claudio Echeverri? Because there was a lot of talk around him being, you know, an option for City at the end of last season. Gone away on loan to Leverkusen and then barely been seen, I believe.
Yeah, not yet. But that's because there is this large competition for places, and you've got players who are trying to, yeah, assert themselves in the first team. And because it is a completely fresh start for everyone, it means that, well, if you perform immediately, then you're going to get your chance ahead of others. And even I wouldn't be too concerned right now, because there are still so many games to play in this season. And the way that looking at how many injuries are befalling every team that is playing in the Champions League, to be honest, and the struggle to keep people fit. I think it's November. There's still time. But yeah, right now, he's just had others ahead of him.
Just looking at Leverkusen's position then, they're currently fifth in the Bundesliga with a few problems. They play Wolfsburg before this one, so you know, maybe the chance to get more points on the board there. In terms of a style, what can City expect in this one? Because a lot of teams normally in a normal season against City, you would expect them not to have a lot of the ball, sit in deep and try and kind of play the low block. In the last few games, City's possession stats have been around 50-50. Are we likely to see another low block and drop from Leverkusen? Or are they going to want the ball?
If they've learned anything from the PSG experience, I wouldn't call it a game, then that they started off in a very low blocky position, and then they came out to play and they were doing well before they then took in, yeah, three goals in the space of 6 minutes before half time, and had to pay the price for that. So that is the question for me: is how are they going to see this, having been slapped down by big sides, not in any kind of fashion like PSG did to them, but Bayern Munich, it was a comprehensive victory. So the question is: do they stick to their attacking principles that you would see more in the Bundesliga, where they do trust themselves a little bit more, or are they going to, or are they going to sit in and think, okay, how can we get a result here? I would err on sitting in a bit more against this City team. When I see Erling Haaland given space to counterattack, I think, well, something went wrong with the game plan there.
Yeah. In terms of form for Leverkusen this season, obviously this one being at the Etihad, probably it could be a lot easier if it wasn't. Let's put it that way. How are they like away from home?
They've been stunning away from home in the Bundesliga for several years. They had not lost an away game in 36, I think it was, which is some kind of record, when Bayern beat them. And they did win away at Benfica as well, but that was a streaky victory over Jose Mourinho's team. Whether you can read too much into that, I don't know, but I think that they are going to have to have more than a plan about how they are setting up for this. So I wouldn't read too much into, what the domestic form is like, because fact is, Leverkusen do not play teams of Manchester City's caliber every week. They just don't. And this is more, I think, about a mark in their journey of, okay, how much have we grown since the PSG game? What have we learned from the experience away at Bayern? This team is far from the finished product. Of course, they do have like players. I mean, there's a former City player there too, in Alish Garcia, I believe. I think he had. I don't know if he really played for City too much.
Yeah, a few games under Pep. Yeah, a few games under Guardiola in about 2016-17. Yeah,
right. But he's somebody worth picking out as somebody who's benefited from the departure of Granit Xhaka, one player I also could have mentioned who was a real glue for this team under Xabi Alonso, and has, I think, been showing that at Sunderland, even if the departure from Leverkusen, I think, was bittersweet in the end in terms of how last season ended for him. But yeah, I think that Garcia has, when big players leave a club, like happened with Leverkusen, those who have really shaped the last 2 years and shaped a very successful, the most successful time in the club's history, then new hierarchies are going to form in the dressing room. And I think that Garcia has benefited being able to take more of a prominent role now, both in midfield, and I think along with being very close to Alejandro Grimaldo, I think that that's helped. And he does look a much more capable player. He looks like the kind of player who shone for Girona in their stunning season when they qualified for the Champions League. So I'm intrigued to see how he copes with this occasion, because, of course, look, every player has a point to prove. But I think, obviously, being a former City player, there's a little bit more of a, well, I want to show you that I was good enough, even if I don't think he was of the requisite level for City. But you never know. How often is it that, you know, things like this happen?
Yeah. Leverkusen in 21st in the Champions League table. What will they be hoping for from this? I mean, there's obviously the 36 places, so they're just about in the currently in the qualification for the playoff round. I assume that's the aim.
So from a Leverkusen perspective, the fact is they've got Newcastle at home after this, Olympiacos away, and Villarreal at home. Those other three games are eminently more winnable than Manchester City away. And even if, I think, such is the position that City are in the Champions League table right now, yeah, of course City are looking over their shoulder a little bit because they have that clutch of teams behind them on 9 points. But so would I think Pep could afford to rotate a bit for a game like this? From a Leverkusen perspective, I think they're going to have to put their eggs more in those last three game baskets. Because, yeah, Newcastle at home, even if Newcastle have been having a good campaign in the Champions League, I wonder if things are not improving in the Premier League, whether they're going to have to start maybe altering their approach a little bit in Europe, because just qualifying for the next round would still be a good result for them. Looking at how Villarreal and Olympiacos have done in the Champions League so far, both of them yet to win, I think that you won't necessarily, a couple of wins will be enough, I think, to qualify. And yeah, Leverkusen, despite having only won one of their four games so far, are in a qualification spot, which tells you what you need, I think, to get in those final three places. And even if they've got teams with big names behind them, you would expect to be challenging. And of course, it's difficult to be across who everyone's got, really.
Yeah. I'm not going to pretend.
Well, of course, in the back of my mind, I know exactly who Marseille, Juventus and Athletic are playing. I don't, but I do know that, yeah, Leverkusen's run, there are gentler fixtures than this to come. So I would be framing this as a bit of a free hit.
Yeah, there's the thing I always think about the Champions League, the new format, is if City could be as bad as they were for as long as they were last season and still get into the playoff round, then, you know, there's hope for everybody down the bottom end of that table. Archie, obviously we're quite a way off from the game at the moment, but how do you think it'll go? Normally I give my score prediction over to the guests. I'm not hosting this week, but I'm going to give Dan's score prediction over to you. So what are you going to have? Well, how do you think it'll go, and what's your score prediction?
3-1 home win. Simple.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That's German football expert Archie Rintutt there. City have been pretty strong in the Champions League this season, Sam, just dropping points in one game. Are you expecting that to continue in this one?
Yeah, especially home game. It does strike me a bit as Leverkusen are decent opponents. They've obviously been getting better as well. But even the way that Dortmund were pretty good against City in part, and they worried City towards the end, they still blew them away. And I'm kind of expecting that to happen. You know, when City are just like, yeah, this is a different level, boys. You might be good, but we're really good. So I'm thinking it might be one of those kind of affairs. And it could be another fun game as well.
Yeah. Would you expect a lot of rotation, Chris? You think the Premier League's the priority that City put a lot of their eggs in at the moment?
Yeah, but it's very important, the Champions League as well. I would expect him to start very strong and, you know, as much as it is possible, given the scares we've had in the past. Yeah. You know, I don't think he'd rotate until it was definitely, rotate heavily until it was definitely very safe.
Yeah.
But I do expect us to win.
Because he said, didn't he, at the start of the campaign, you just win all your home games and get a couple of wins away and you'll be all right. And obviously, this is just one of those where you've got to win, because it's Madrid next, right? And then there's the break. Yeah,
especially with Madrid.
And then there's the two games in January. One of them.
It'd be nice if it sort of wrapped up by those two games in January, wouldn't it, really? Yeah, get it wrapped up ASAP,
If they didn't win this, I think they'd consider that a massive mess up. And
Christmas pun was right there.
And then you've got to go to Madrid and like definitely try and win, which, you know, I'm sure they'd be very happy, even with this kind of more direct style. I'm sure they'd be very happy going to Madrid and going, let's just stodge this up, get a 0-0 and go home. But if they had to get a better result, that would be a bit of a nightmare scenario for them. So, yeah, I think they will make changes, but it'll still be very strong. And to be honest, I do expect them to win it. If they don't, it would be a bit of a slip up.
Yeah, Leverkusen have, of course, got Claudio Echeverri on loan from City. I think he can actually play, because I don't think the rules apply, do they, for parent clubs in the Champions League?
Right.
But I doubt he will play, because he's not been playing at all for them. Maybe they're saving him for the DFB Pokal final, Sam?
Yeah, another stunning debut off the bench. Yeah. It'd be really good at finding pockets and then blasting it straight at the nearest defender. That was really good, that. That hasn't worked out, has it? And I'm
getting a look in, is he? They changed manager, didn't they?
Yeah, very early. Am I right in saying City wanted him to go somewhere else? And he went, no,
Girona,
I'm going here. Well, yeah, you can see why he said, I don't really want to do that.
Yeah.
And probably vindicated, because they've not been doing so well, have they? Or they started the season terribly anyway. But I think with Leverkusen,
maybe they needed Echeverri.
Yeah, maybe. but it is a shame, isn't it? Because he is obviously good. I've always kind of just disputed whether he'd be City level, but we're just getting further away from finding out, because if you go on a loan like that and it's a bit of a disaster, then it was already going to be difficult for him to break through. So yeah, it's a shame that I don't know what's happened. But yeah, sacking Ten Hag after a few games can't have been ideal for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a nice little cul-de-sac for him to be in, is it? I think maybe a reset back to South America and then literally, right, let's go again from here. And we'll see what
maybe happens. I don't know. Maybe they go, look, you could do a Girona, mate. Do it. And like, maybe not back to South America. Maybe it's as simple as just go and live in Spain. You can speak Spanish there. You'll feel a bit more at home. You get a bit more used to Europe, but it's a bit more to your taste, your style. Do that. Which, to be fair, was probably City's viewpoint in the first place with Girona. He might, I don't know. It seems like that would be a bit of a no-brainer now, but I don't know. We'll have to see. But to be honest, even if he'd done brilliantly at Leverkusen, I don't necessarily think it would have led to him being a big first team regular next season. I think he's a very good player, but I think City are even better than that overall. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Right, it's charity bet time now. Chris, you came close to a win last time we did this. Your prediction of a 3-1 win over Liverpool wasn't quite close enough, though. I think we can thank the PGMOL for that. And that means we're still on £75 for the Man City fans food bank support group this season. Let's see if we can boost that kitty for them a little bit now, because William Hill is giving us three £10 correct score singles for the Newcastle and Leverkusen games. Let's start with Newcastle. What you fancy for that, Sam?
2-0 to City, I believe I went for.
You did. And that is a 10-1. So that'll be £110 if you're right. Chris, what you fancy?
I've been generous enough to give Newcastle a goal, so I've gone 2-1 City.
2-1 is 15-2, that's £85 if you're right, and our Newcastle guest went for 2-2, so that's 11-1 and £120 if he's right. And for Leverkusen, Sam?
4-0. I think I kind of gave the reasoning for that, didn't I? Like, I think it's going to be that kind of game.
Yeah, that's 10-1 as well, so £110 if you're right. Chris, what are you going for?
Well, I originally went for, I wanted 3-1, didn't I? But our German friend went for 3-1. So I've gone for 4-1, yeah. Over the optimist.
4-1 is 12-1. So longer odds for Leverkusen to score than not score in that game. That's £130 if you're right. And yeah, Archie went for 3-1, and that's 9-1 and £100 if he's right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. For more information on responsible gambling, have a look at gambleaware.org. Right, let's finish up with a listener question. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can contact us on bluesky@bluemoonpodcast.com or via email, contact@bluemoonpodcast.com. You can also get in touch via Instagram. Just search for Blue Moon Podcast and slide into our DMs. TJ has emailed in. He says, given the improvements that Nico Gonzalez has made recently, which players at City would you say Guardiola has improved the most? Whether that's gotten them to realise their full potential, gotten them to a level that you didn't think possible, or even taking players that were already club legends and making them better. Any advance on Nico Gonzalez, Sam?
I'm sure there is. Zinchenko always strikes me as an obvious one. I know his stock's subsequently fallen, but again, maybe that backs up the point. You leave Pep and you leave City's yeah. very specific game plan, and you know the magic wears off. Zinchenko's one, but I mean, like Aguero was always great. And then he really locked in. Like Aguero scored most of his goals before. In fact, I don't know if that's true actually, but he would have scored what 2/3 of his City goals before Guardiola came. But then he decided another dimension, and eternal credit for that. I don't know. It would be interesting to see how Foden would have done if he'd not had Guardiola's guidance. But that's a bit of an off the wall shout. You wouldn't necessarily put him at the top of that list. Sterling.
Definitely Sterling for me.
Sterling just made the numbers.
In terms of full potential.
Yeah, and especially in hindsight now, the way he was playing. I mean, look, maybe a bit of rose-tinted glasses now, because I don't think if he ever went through on goal, even when he was at his peak, I don't think we always felt super confident. But if you look at the numbers, and he was a bit of a whirlwind, wasn't he, for a couple of years there, two, maybe 3 years under Pep. So I think Sterling's definitely won.
Is Rodri one?
It's always difficult, isn't it? Because it's like anyone who looks like Nico. It's like, are they good because of Pep? Are they good just because they've got older and better? But obviously, it is both, isn't it? Would Rodri have become the player he is now with his mindset and ability? You know, if he'd stayed at Atletico Madrid under Simeone, possibly. It is hard to say, isn't it? That's why Zinchenko is such an obvious one, because it's kind of nothing was really expected of you, and then you delivered this.
Yeah, true.
There'll be loads, surely. Like Edison.
Fabian Delph.
Delph, yeah, I was just thinking that.
Edison,
I don't really know enough about him before to judge, but has he dropped off at the moment as well? Or
I think the drop-off already kind of set in, didn't it, to be fair, for the reasons he kind of
well,
discussed.
That's true, yeah. Pre-drop-off.
Another question on Nico. Let's say, you know, maybe not this weekend, but perhaps a few weeks or months into the future, that Rodri's fully fit and available to start and available to play 90 minutes. Has Nico been so good that he could potentially keep Rodri out of the first team, the starting lineup?
I mean, he has
still
been
Rodri,
good, but
Rodri and 10 others.
Well, look, yeah, exactly. Well, like if Rodri's fit and ready and playing amazingly, then Nico has been really good, hasn't he? But he's not been that level. So no, but if Rodri's not the top Rodri, then yes, because Nico's level will be higher than that. But yeah, all things being equal, he's never going to be keeping Rodri out of the team, unless just Rodri's being rested.
As he continues to improve, though, I mean, if you look at the trajectory that Rodri was on, it's kind of similar in terms of, you know, growth in stature that Gonzalez is on. And if he continues to play that well, he's certainly good enough to allow us to rotate the two if we need to do that. He's not looked out of place with when Rodri's not been in the team, so you know why wouldn't that continue? It's great to see him reaching new levels all the time, and the same could have been said of Rodri at the same stage.
Could you see them playing together in the same team
if need be? Yeah,
yeah, I could. It would maybe ask Nico just to go a bit higher, you know, carry the ball like he can do, and take that up towards the edge of the box. Maybe it might. It feels overly negative, that, but I'm sure a couple of games of them doing it and it working would change my mind quite quickly. But the thing is with Nico as well, it might be quite a nice, not nice, because it wouldn't be nice, but there might be quite a seamless overlap with Rodri, because, you know, Pep said he's not going to be at his best until next season or the World Cup. Well, if that continues to be the case, then there's obviously going to be more opportunities for Nico, and then he can just go from strength to strength in theory. But then it would be nice if Rodri was going to sign a new contract. You'd like to be hearing about it in the next 6 weeks. Mm. And then if he doesn't, you start to think, is this going to be his last season? You know, just worst case scenario kind of thing. And then that's when Nico's trajectory goes in the same way as Rodri's, hopefully. Mm. But then there's not going to be the Rodri kind of barrier in his way. But that's, you know, that's just one possible scenario. Yeah.
Not heard any negative rumblings, have you, about Rodri's contractual?
Not necessarily about the contract. I don't know. Out of context, I'm not sure if it's the full picture. I don't think he's always been especially happy with how things are going. But again, I don't know if that's because he's annoyed with decisions or he's annoyed with his own body. But I'd like to.
He was definitely pissed off last season with the playing staff and how things were going, wasn't he?
Yeah, seemingly.
Talked about mentality, and it was basically very, you know, not hard to read between the lines that he was pissed off with the players and perhaps the players that have been bought, and that was kind of comments directed at not only the playing staff but upper echelons
there
as well.
There was a thing at Brighton.
Things have turned around.
There was a thing at Brighton at the start of the season, wasn't there? Like, we need to improve a lot off the pitch, like especially off the pitch and things like that. I don't know where that's gone, but I would.
Oh, there was this season that, wasn't it? Sorry,
but yeah, I would like to. Yeah, I would like to get a nice positive update on that before Christmas, because otherwise you start to think, oh, when's this going to happen? I mean, that said, Haaland signed that new deal out of nowhere at the start of January, didn't he? But yeah, the plan was definitely to do the Diaz contract, which they've done, and then get Rodri sorted. But it's been a while now. So with those kind of rumblings as they are about him not being too happy about certain things, we'll see how it pans out, I guess.
Yep. And unless some news has broken while we've been recording that we're not aware of, we seem to have got through another international break without a resolution on the charges. So that's another thing that's still rumbling on. Sam, to borrow a phrase from Let Me Talk, gun to your head, when's that going to happen? What's going to happen? If you had to make a wildest guess, what would you go for?
What, as in, just pull as the in what's going to happen?
Yeah.
I guess it'll just, because I've not thought about it for so long, but I guess what I used to think about it was City will get a fine for not cooperating. And that'll be about it. I don't think there's necessarily any reason to believe that the delay suggests one thing or the other. I think it's just an incredibly long process, is it? In terms of when it's going to be now, I was looking forward to being off, first of all, in June and then from July onwards, and I was thinking it was going to be then, like everyone was. Everyone thought it was going to be last season, and then everyone thought it was going to be the summer. So now, it's a bit like Pep's contract, isn't it? It could be there forever. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. Chris, have you just become incredibly blasé about it like I have at this point?
Yeah, I mean, there's only so many different combinations of thoughts and emotions you can have on it, and you don't have new options to explore, you know, intellectually or emotionally. The longer it goes on, it just becomes a little bit, like as you say, it's a bit more boring, really. Just get it out of the way. It might have something to play into why they've not got their eye on the ball with Rodri's contract potentially. Everyone's concentrating on behind the scene wranglings to do with 115. I don't know. I mean, that's very vague and speculative of me. I don't really know what's going on behind there at all, but you never know. I've got a bottle of Fizz in a cupboard at home, which is like, I must dust it actually. Not in the fridge yet because, you know, the fridge is full of more relevant things. But I'd love to be able to get it out, get it on ice and open it. But yeah, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Crack that open and crack open Twitter. Just have a good nice evening.
The sound of rolling heads, music to my ears.
Right, well, that's it for this episode of the Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you to my guests, Chris Higginbottom.
Thank you for having me.
And Sam Lee.
Yeah, cheers, lads. Enjoyed that.
There's a clip of the most recent nostalgia episode coming up in a moment. That was an episode of City Heaven, City Hell, where City fan Bob Toole and Leicester fan Neil from the Beyond the 90 LCFC podcast picked out some good and bad games from matches between the two sides. The full thing is available now for Patreon members. Head on over to members.bluemoonpodcast.com for more information. We're also not far off Christmas now, so if you're looking for a present for a City fan, then you could get them a subscription to the Patreon. You'll be getting them access to the nostalgia shows each Monday, plus this episode at the end of the week without the ads. You can find more details at gift.bluemoonpodcast.com. David Mooney will be back next week to review Newcastle and Leverkusen and look ahead to the matches against Leeds and Fulham. Join us then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget,
You can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Weirdly, I look back on the game kind of fondly because it's gone down in folklore a little bit, I think, with City, because this is the game where Pep said afterwards, like, what's tackles? I don't train the tackles. And thinking about the context at the time, Pep's first season at City, there was a lot of knives out for him and sort of this idea that he couldn't ever bring his style of football to England and be successful with it. We obviously got battered by Leicester here. So this is like the first real moment where like Pep's properly been shown up. I think there was a lot of glee in the press in afterwards. But when you look at it in hindsight, it was on the cards. I mean, looking at our back three that day, it was Zabaleta, Stones and Sanya. And Zabaleta and Sanya were like old men by this point. Aguero, Fernandinho and Otamendi were all suspended. It's really not a great surprise that we got absolutely battered in that game, really.
For me, it was the fourth goal, the Jamie Vardy for the hat-trick. So remember, he was coming round the corner. The goal was unbelievably tight. I think it bounced off the inside of the post and just went in as well. Just thinking, another hat-trick. And also, we're still living in this fantasy of Jamie Vardy and what he achieved for us.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.